You're listening to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate. Our phone number is 564-1290 or 866-564-1290. Go to RadioRealEstate.com, RadioRealEstate.com, to listen to past programs and find real estate information. Call me after the program at 452-2428, 452-CHAT. I see an ant on the console here, Jaron. I know you might want to call Dan Lenz. I might have brought it in with me. I haven't killed it. I'll try to take it outside and... There he is. It's an actual ant. Are you going to kill it or take it outside? You can take it outside. A true humanitarian. I actually will do that. Now, if the ant was on a piece of property I wanted to build, I would kill it. Okay. Dave Mullinax, League of California Cities. during the break, we were talking about how many thousands, just so many bills coming up. It's just overwhelmed. But I want to talk a little bit more about the zoning issue of zoning. You zone for these, but you don't necessarily build them. So I want to explain that. But I do want to mention, it's kind of timely, this was in the paper about the road rage. Did you read about this?
No, I did not.
A man was targeted. He was a driver of a Verizon van, and he was targeted 200 miles north, and a guy followed him all the way to Santa Barbara until he was accosted actually in the La Cumbre Plaza shopping center. And the guy got off there, he was calling the cops, and he finally got off the freeway, and he was circling La Cumbre Plaza, and the guy had thrown like a brick at the guy, at the Verizon van driver. So they finally, but what was not in the paper was they arrested the guy, and the Verizon van driver was taunting the arresting man as he was, while he was saying, "Can you hit me now? Can you hit me now?" So that was a little cold. So you zone, you man. I don't know if we're going to have time for this eminent domain, but we'll try to sneak something in. But the final thing is you zone for these houses, but then maybe you don't build them. Now, is that a card shell game, rather, that some cities are playing?
Quite often it is. Again, those state housing mandate numbers are numbers to zone for local jurisdictions, whether county or cities, to zone for 5 and 6 year cycles. And some cities do play shell games with it, quite frankly, around the state, and some cities build for it. And what's kind of annoying to local governments, you have a city like Santa Maria who has actually built homes that have exceeded their housing mandate numbers, and they still have troubles getting their housing element signed off from Sacramento, because again, you have a couple of project managers. You have very few project managers overseeing all these things, and it's very difficult to work up in to work with Sacramento quite often. And they've been nitpicking with the city of Santa Maria on certain elements of their housing element, and they have not been able to get theirs certified yet, and they've been building homes. Now, a lot of communities, in order to get their housing element certified, they do play these shell games, and it happens all around the state. And quite frankly, a couple of years ago, there was a study, very well publicized study, by the Public Policy Institute of California, one of the leading think tanks here in the state on public policy, that showed that there was absolutely no nexus between these housing mandate numbers and actual homes being built. So it's kind of a game. It's kind of a shell game from the state level all the way down in one respect. And I think what local governments would like to see is, let's have these local cogs, these regional bodies, generate the numbers that are appropriate for their communities. And that's the trend we would like to see.
Now, okay, has anyone tried to do that? Have they said, okay, look, why don't we, here's the numbers that we feel, and can you get a bunch of the cities to do that so Sacramento can look at it and they could add up and they could think, well, if these are realistic, maybe you'll actually build these?
That's kind of the process. The state will give, okay, they'll tell Santa Barbara, okay, we want you to build this number. The COG, the regional body, will say, no, we'll zone for this number. And there's kind of a little bargaining going back and forth. But quite frankly, the state up in Sacramento has the final hammer on what final numbers are giving to the regional bodies. And whether they're appropriate or not is one question. And there's also, they tell local governments to build these, and they could be state like CEQA type of issues, water issues, that local governments can't build for these type type of numbers, and the state says, well, you guys have to reconcile them.
So why? So just to clarify, when you mentioned earlier the disparity between the numbers and what's being built, the Sacramento, am I correct? Sacramento is saying we want you to zone for this number of houses.
Correct.
They're not saying we want you to build these houses.
Correct.
So how stupid are they? Why don't they say we want you to build these houses? We want to see building permits pulled within X number, da-da-da-da.
Well, they hope to be able, they hope the zoning leads to building, obviously, but quite frankly, you know, and the market has to dictate some of that as well. I mean, you can't force builders to build if it doesn't pencil out. If you don't have a water supply, what are you going to do in a local government area if they don't have the water?
Okay.
So what they do is they hope the zoning does lead to building. One of the problems local governments has as well is that so few people think when they pay their property taxes, that money pays for all these services. Well, over the years, starting with Prop 13.
Pays for what services?
Property taxes. Most people think they pay for police and fire and the libraries and, you know, fixing your potholes. Well, that's simply not the case.
They pay your salary.
The state actually, the local governments only retain about 12 cents on the dollar of every property tax dollar generated. The state takes the rest.
Interesting.
And it gets filtered through a bunch of other different types of state programs. And education is part of that as well. But starting with Prop 13 and what's known as the ERAF shift in the early 90s, where the state diverted monies that they were supposed to give to education. They said, you know what, we're going to divert a large chunk of local property tax that would normally go to local governments, and they diverted that to local schools as well.
There's another op-ed piece written by Mike Stoker yesterday.
That's right.
It's exactly why he was opposed to Measure D originally, and then I guess he was misquoted saying he was actually for it when I was against it, but I was for it, and then I wasn't getting it. You know. And now he clarified that, and that's precisely why he's opposed to it, is because they make an agreement to spend money on one thing, and then they kind of shift it.
That happens a lot. In fact, we have a...
But that's the way really the whole country works, isn't it, though? I mean, there's not going
to... And you're never going to stop that completely.
Right.
You see that happen almost every year up at the state legislature when the budget process comes around. There's, you know, the trend now is for, instead of organizations try to work bills through the legislature, they go straight to the ballot. Right now you only have two initiatives on the ballot in June qualified that will be on the ballot, and two qualified right now for November, but you'll probably see about 20. You have literally 50 in circulation. And what that is special interest groups, they don't trust the legislature to do the right thing. If you have $1 million, you can go out and pay signature gatherers, get it straight on the ballot, and run a campaign and change the state constitution that way.
I did have a call once from someone. We were talking about state taxes, and they just couldn't understand, since Santa Barbara's median price has gone up so much, and so the taxes, and there's been a lot of turnover, so Prop 13 becoming, you know, less impactful, you would think. Such a huge increase in the median price of homes, such an increase in taxes paid. Why aren't we seeing any benefit? And you answered the question. I knew that, because it would screw all the small, poorer counties, and they would, you know, they would have nothing. But only 12 cents
on average. I think it's less here in Santa Barbara.
Naturally.
And you got to remember, even though the median house might be up over $1 million, a lot of people have been living here, you know, 20 or 30 years, and their Prop 13 number is the price that they're paying taxes on the amount they paid for that house.
Yep.
So they might have paid $150,000 for that $1 million home, so they're paying taxes equivalent to $150,000.
Right, so overall, there's still a huge base, you're saying.
And that's why you see so many local governments going out there and trying to get Walmarts or these big box stores or auto malls for this. It's called the fiscalization of land use.
This will lead right into what you'll have to come back for the next program, is to talk about eminent domain. Okay, here's and we can talk about the SOAR initiative, which is also trying to.
Sure.
Why don't you explain that real quickly?
Now, the SOAR initiatives are been popularized down in Ventura mostly. Is that you can only build within city curb lines. And there is very little building outside the actual city lines.
What do they call them? The urban boundary lines?
Urban boundary lines. Thank you very much. And so you've seen a SOAR approach, I think, up and slow like about 10 years ago in San Luis Obispo County. It was poorly written, though, and it failed at the box. But you'll see that's the trend on land use also, is that more and more of these land use issues are going straight to the local ballot. And I'm not real sure that that's a good trend, actually.
You know, yeah, as much as I want local control, I'm not quite certain, because that could really stymie a lot of reasonable, what might be reasonable. So, you know, it's kind of a... But it was, here was a great article that I cut out from the LA Times. Oh, damn, there's not a date on it. It's probably early, the first couple of months of 2006 here. And it said, the title is Land Seized for Animal Shelter May Be Sold to Developer-Donor. And, you know, it's, you know, quoting John... Do you know the president of the Howard Jarvis Taxpayer Association?
John Kupal.
John Kupal. I didn't know how to pronounce his name. It strikes me as a blatant, extraordinarily blatant abuse of eminent domain. And apparently some guy was forced to sell his property to the city to put up an animal shelter. And then, you know, I don't know if it was 3 years later or somebody there. It's not happening. And he had a manufacturing, a furnishing design, and he had to move away, and he had hardship. And now they're turning it around, and they want to sell it to someone who has another kind of furnishing. Do you know this story?
There have been a couple of these stories.
You couldn't even make it up. It sounds like a joke.
This has really come from last year's Supreme Court decision, and there's a very controversial issue. I know we're running late.
Well, you know what? That's a whole. We could have gone either way, and I originally intended to start with eminent domain, but I thought since the housing issue was so on the front burner, sure, here, I thought we'd talk about that. Dave Mullinax from the League of California Cities. He's the Regional Public Affairs Director. And is there a website for you, real quickly?
Yeah, it's www.cacities.org, and talks about our organization and the bills and legislation that we are supporting, okay, and opposing.
Okay, CACities for CaliforniaCities.org.
Correct.
Thanks, Dave. Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, 9 minutes to the hour. We'll come back for the weekly multiple listing sales update.